This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today is John Paul Buzard of the Buzard Pipe Organ Company. Welcome, John.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, you've been building pipe organs for how long now?
I've been building organs in one form or another, since about 1980. But my company has been in existence for about the last 15, 18 years, thereabouts. In fact, I mark the time that we moved into what we refer to as our new building, which is actually an old hotel building in downtown Champaign, as we moved in 17 years ago, the same year that my son was born.
And how did you get started building pipe organs?
Well, I got bitten by this nasty bug, and it wouldn't let me go, basically. My dad was an Episcopal priest in the Diocese of Chicago in the early 60s, and his first parish was St. Paul's by the Lake on the north side of Chicago. And they had a pipe organ and a bell in the tower, so I knew it was a real church. It was great. Well, the first time I heard the organ, played by a man who was my organist choir master, a fellow named Albert Johann Strom, Northwestern University class of 1908. He had been there for 52 years and only missed two Sundays. This is the kind of professional organist he was. But when I first heard him play, I was 5 years old, and I was absolutely transfixed by the sound. And I knew I had to play them. But it was on a Sunday morning when we were singing the sermon hymn, and my dad was getting ready to preach, that an errant pipe in the organ just spoke and spoke and spoke and would not shut up. And so AJ looked across his pince-nez at me and beckoned to me to come on up across the chancel, go upstairs, and we'll have to fix this because we can't just have this thing screaming out there for everybody. And so we opened the organ chamber door, and here's this hissing monster that meets me in the face. And when a boy is maybe 3 or 4 feet tall, you know, a 16-foot long pipe is giant. And it turns out it was a very simple repair. It was dirt and a magnet that I had to clear out. But he was in his 70s, and he couldn't climb down the little ladder to get into this. And I just knew right then. I thought, ooh, I could do this, and I really want to do it, but I want to build them. Not just fix them, but build them. That was right about when I was 6 years old.
Why have writers not seen that wonderful opportunity of a child in an organ loft? That would be great in a Harry Potter story or something.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Now, you said your father was an Episcopal priest. Priests sometimes move around a bit. Where did you spend your youth?
Well, Chicago, Evanston first. My dad's first position after he was out of seminary was actually not at a parish, but was with what they called the Division of Research. And they basically, he was in charge of going out to the then little farming communities that they knew were going to become suburbs and site new missions and parishes. But on Sundays, even though he didn't have a parish, he had to take over a mission. And so I remember very vividly as a little boy, we'd go out to Wauconda, Illinois, which now is this suburb with strip malls and all kinds of stuff and a parish building that my dad founded. Well, we had to hold church in the VFW hall. And so my early recollection of church was that there'd be a drunk passed out in the bar next to church that had a piano. And so to get dad at a parish in Chicago where there was an organ and a bell and a tower and stained glass windows, you know, I knew this was
changed.
A place I could talk to God, right. You know. But he was there for almost 10 years and didn't really move around. That was his parish.
Okay.
He retired early from the active ministry in 1969 because he just came to the realization that he had two boys to put through school ultimately, and being a parish priest was not making the kind of money that he wanted to be able to. It's kind of ironic then for me to go working in churches that my dad suggested maybe I wouldn't want to.
Let me let listeners know that we're going to be hearing some pipe organ music during this program. And John Paul, I've asked to bring some samples of the way the pipe organs are used in worship.
Mm-hmm.
They're, of course, used in concert halls, too, but you've specialized in churches. And tell us about this first piece we're going to hear that's from King's College Choir in Cambridge.
Oh, sure. King's College in Cambridge has a fabulous Harrison organ, built originally, well, its original case is from like 1615, but the Harrison organ is really from the earlier part of the 20th century. And it is the organ. That's interesting you should pick this as a first cut. This is the organ that really inspired me to want, it inspired me in terms of my tonal style, how I really want organs to sound. Because this particular organ has so many different tone colors that you can paint the text of whatever you're singing with a wash of different kinds of sound. So here we're going to hear a hymn. One of the things that organs have to do in churches is lead or support hymn singing by a congregation. And when you have an organ that has a wide variety of color and a real body to it, then 500, 600, 1,000 people in their singing are easily supported by these tones.
Let's listen to this piece. We're going to play one that's very appropriate for the season. Now Thank We All Our God. In preparation for celebration of Thanksgiving on Thursday, the King's College Choir in Cambridge, England. Thank We All Our God with the organ in Cambridge King's College. We're talking with John Paul Buzzard of the Buzzard Pipe Organ Company here in Champaign. How many pipe organs have you built now?
Currently, we're building our 35th organ, 35th new organ since our company was founded. That will be at St. Peter's Episcopal Church in Chicago. We just finished a rather interesting organ for a Lutheran church in Racine, Wisconsin. The church is actually designed to look like a spaceship. It's actually a flying saucer, to where the ceiling is domed, much like the assembly hall, and the floor is exactly the opposite curve. And into this, we're expected to put a pipe organ. And it turned out really very well. It's a very exciting look, actually.
Frank Lloyd Wright designed a Greek Orthodox church like that in Milwaukee. So I wonder how similar they might be. Let's talk a little bit about an organ here in Champaign that we're going to hear next. And you're brave to let me compare this one in King's College, Cambridge.
Yeah, I have let myself open, haven't I?
To one here in Champaign. But it's in your home parish.
Yes.
You're following in your father's footsteps. You are a practicing Episcopalian at the Chapel of St. John the Divine here on campus. And when did you build this organ?
This organ was built in 1991. It's the first one that I built in the kind of tonal style that King's College, Cambridge has inspired me, which I know is setting myself up even to a greater degree. But the fact that those kinds of sounds can lead hymn singing and can also accompany choirs. They can play loudly and never really cover up the voices, but they can play pianissimo and still support congregational singing. It's a phenomenon that you don't hear out of electronic organs or even orchestral kinds of instruments. It's a much different kind of beast a pipe organ is.
Pianissimo, very, very soft.
Very, very soft, yes.
Okay. Now tell us what we're going to hear. This is the University of Illinois Concert Choir.
Yes, they came over to the chapel last year and performed, among other things, they performed the Requiem by Maurice Durufle, who was mostly known as an organ composer. But the Requiem is a beautiful setting of the ordinary of the Mass for a Requiem, using the chant tunes. He harmonized them in such beautifully romantic or impressionistic ways. It was originally scored for orchestra, but he also made an organ reduction. And Dr. Dana Robinson, who is the professor of organ here at University of Illinois, played the accompaniment for this piece. What we're going to hear is the last movement, the In Paradisum. There it is, In Paradisum. And they performed this, it was like April 9th of last year, or this year actually, it was this last semester.
In 06. Well, let's listen to an organ that was built by John Paul Buzard and his organ technicians that's been now since 91 at the Chapel of St. John the Divine on the corner of Wright and Armory in Champaign, right opposite the University Library. We'll be hearing the University of Illinois Concert Choir and Professor Dana Robinson playing.
And conducted by Chet Alwes.
Chet Alwes. And Professor Dana Robinson playing the organ.
Thank you.
Well, we've just heard a choral piece accompanied by organ. That's another thing that pipe organs are asked to do, to accompany the choir that's, mm-hmm. that sings a piece that they've rehearsed with the organist in a worship setting.
Mm-hmm.
What are the challenges for a pipe organ?
Well, one of the greatest challenges is to have an instrument with enough variety of colors at soft volumes so that you can paint the text, so that the sounds mirror what the choir is singing. In this example that we just heard, we heard some of the softest sounds in the organ, and that was accompanying this chant in Paradisium, may the angels guide your soul into heaven. It's the last thing that we can say. So in terms of a choral accompanying organ, you have to have a lot of flexibility in color, but also you have to have a lot of flexibility in terms of gradations of dynamics. So, for example, our organs might be, we might have a greater percentage of our organs installed inside what are called expression boxes, so that the organist, by means of a foot pedal, can gradually decrease the volume of the pipes that are enclosed or gradually increase them. That way you can really subtly shade the volume to match what the chorus is doing. And there are all kinds of different traditions of choral music. The Lutheran tradition would have come out of the chorales or out of the hymnody. In the case of the Episcopal Church, it's the Anglican musical tradition, with all these great English anthems that have been written for forever, it seems. And in the Catholic Church, it's chant. It's they're sort of rediscovering that, in fact, these days. But that's kind of the challenge, and one very real challenge, which is merely a matter of physics and reality, is in order to have a really, really flexible choral accompanying organ, you have to have an organ of some size with a certain number of sets of pipes. But often, well, for example, in the chapel, that results in an organ that some people would think might be a little too large for the building. That's kind of one of the challenges, and to get an organ committee at a church to embrace that whole concept that, yes, it's going to be a bigger number of sets of pipes than maybe you have seen from other builders. But that doesn't mean it's going to be any louder. That means it's just going to be more flexible, have a greater dynamic range.
You're listening to Keeping the Faith here on AM 580. And some listeners who've been hearing us play some examples of pipe organs may think they're on the FM side of WILL. But no, this is AM, and you do have an opportunity to also join this conversation we're having with the organ builder, John Paul Buzard, who's our guest in the studio today. If you have a question or a comment anywhere the program is heard, you may use an 800 number, including those folks who are listening on the Internet, 1-800-222-9455 is a toll-free call, 1-800-222-WILL. Listeners in Champaign-Urbana may access several lines by punching in 333-9455. So folks in Champaign-Urbana may call 333-WILL. And during that last piece, we did have a caller who had a question. They'd like a brief history of the pipe organ. Now, it's one of the most ancient instruments mm-hmm. for accompanying Christian worship, but John Paul, tell us a bit about that.
A brief history of the organ. The organ basically was developed since about 5 BC, and it was used at that time. It was basically a signaling instrument. It didn't have keys like we would know it, but it basically called people to worship in the temples. That the organ evolved during the Roman times to be actually powered by the weight of a cistern of water that would bear down on a wind reservoir and provide compressed air or wind to play individual pipes, again, more for soloing sounds rather than playing individual notes. About the 14th, 15th century, organs got bigger and bigger, and they began to be used in Christian worship. And what what they developed in terms of the keyboard and in terms of being able to play individual sets of pipes, different kinds of parameters. The keys basically started out as being very wide and would be played with the fist. So you could play like one, maybe two notes at a time, and they'd have a huge spring that would send them back. And in order for organs to be loud enough in big abbeys or big cathedrals or even large parish churches, they had several pipes playing at the same time. Some of them, they would all be parts of the same harmonic spectrum for that particular note. So you might have an organ that had 12 or 15 sets of pipes, but there was no way to shut individual sets of pipes off. So you basically were playing full organ all the time, whether you liked it or not. Well, it was about the 15th century, the organ builders, developed what are called stops. And this is a way of stopping off individual ranks of pipes. When we say today, Michael Jordan pulled out all the stops on the basketball floor, this is the last pop culture reference to pipe organs that we have left. Because when you pull out all the stops on an organ console, you are playing every pipe in the organ, you're playing it as loud as possible. And back in even the 19th century, that took a lot of doing. That was high tech back then, to be able to have all of this mechanical linkage control valves and to be able to raise enough wind to blow all of these pipes. Fast forward to a time in the 19th century where organs began to use electricity to play. Now in the 20th, 21st century, we use both electricity. We also use mechanical means. Those are called trackers. So there are mechanical action organs. There are combinations of the two where we might use an electric magnet to open the valve that would otherwise be done by mechanical means. That's a very, very brief, quick history.
We do have a couple other callers waiting. So great. Let's go to line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Yes. This was a fine introduction to the history of pipe organs. I'll make my question very brief. Can you tell me, with Thanksgiving coming up, how we can glorify God through the organ? Thank you.
How God can be glorified through the pipe organ in worship, with particularly thinking about Thanksgiving. Are there particular pieces? We started off with that hymn, Now Thank We All Our God.
I just think about going to church on Thanksgiving and singing those wonderful familiar hymns, and just the fact that the organ supports our singing adds to the inspiration that I get when I sing those hymns.
And so many of the ancient Hebrew psalms that are in the Jewish Bible as well as the Christian Bible are psalms of praise, mm-hmm. which is I heard this morning in church at St. Peter's United Church of Christ that in the Psalms, thanksgiving is paralleled in that Hebrew poetry with praise. And so any of those psalms of praise that show up in hymnals still today, mm-hmm. from the psalms of 3,000 years
sure,
ago are also giving thanks. And,
yeah.
and organs, of course, support all those hymns that we still sing. We have another caller waiting. Let's go to line number two. Yes, you're on the air.
Hello. I have a two-part question. Does your company provide computer interfaces to your organs? And how do you feel about a computer controlling the pipe organ? I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Oh, I'm sorry you hung up. I was going to ask you a question to follow up on that.
I'm still here.
Oh, you're still there. Okay. When you're talking about how do I feel about a computer controlling our organ, there are a number of different levels at which that can happen. Are you to what are you alluding?
Well, the debate between the fact that a human being controls a pipe organ and is doing something
uh-huh.
greater than himself,
mm-hmm.
but if you surrender control over to a computer, you're somehow losing something. I'm a technophile myself,
uh-huh.
so I know which side of the question.
Okay,
I'm also curious about how you feel about it and how other people feel about it.
Oh, well, thank you for asking. I think that this all sort of speaks to the history of organs and organ building. Earlier I'd said that the first organs, and there's been a resurgence in building of mechanical action organs, where the organist, when he or she plays a key, is actually drawing a piece of wood through a trace to open a valve. The argument in favor of mechanical action is that the organist feels everything that happens, much like a pianist feels the hammer hitting the string. The difficulty, and where to me that argument breaks down, is when you have a large organ where a single finger cannot move all that much wood and open valves sensitively. You simply need to, pardon me for the vernacular, you need to yank the valves open as surely as you can in order to play on time. In large organs, mechanical action organs, where the action is not assisted in some way, whether by a pneumatic computer or by an electric interface, organists can actually develop carpal tunnel kinds of syndromes because the actions are so heavy. So now we get to that later 20th century, now we're talking about, of using electricity to help us play organs. That can be done in any number of ways. And to advance to your question about how a computer would control an organ, it would be, as you would imagine, only with an electric action organ. One needs in any electric action pipe organ to be able to control the switching, to be able to have... If the organist presses middle C, then through the wires, the organ needs to know that middle C valve is supposed to open. That switching system can be done with wooden switches with lots and lots of contact fingers. It can be done by multiple contacts, a giant umbilical cord of wires running from the console to the organ itself. But better is if you are able to eliminate as much and as many moving parts in that system as possible.
Well, that speaks to the physical side, essentially using the computer as a robot to do your bidding.
Right.
Where the human is still in control. But I was more curious about, you know, recording performances to be played back later by the computer.
Uh-huh.
And not really replacing the composer, but replacing the organist. I realize that may be a rather sensitive issue.
Oh, yes, I can appreciate that. Now, in answering briefly then to your question, I have no problem with a computer interface between the keyboards and the organ itself, because that's a very efficacious way of opening valves with two wires running from one place to the other. Where I do have a problem is when we record somebody playing an organ through a computer, put their performance on a hard drive, and then play that back with the expectation that we're listening to somebody play the organ where it's actually a disembodied soul that's not there any longer. We actually, in our new organs, we include this little option, this little feature. But it's, as I point out to organists, and especially to their pastors, this is a practice tool. This is something that the organist can use to get a sense of how the organ sounds in other locations in the room. For example, the organist has to perform, has to accompany the choir with a very complicated anthem accompaniment, let's say, that uses a lot of the expression pedals and everything. Well, he or she can record that digitally in the hard drive and then go out in the church and see if the effect that is being gotten is the one that's intended. And in that case, that's a wonderful tool. But if, and I've heard this happening before, and I've never actually run into it, but I've heard that there are situations in which a church will have someone play the whole hymnal into a hard drive, and you pick the hymn and play it, and the organ sort of plays itself. That's where I really disagree. We need real human organists to play organs, pure and simple.
That's the nub of the question I was asking.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for your question.
I didn't think there'd be any controversy talking about pipe organs. But
Well, thank you very much. We're talking with John Paul Buzard today here on Keeping the Faith about building pipe organs for use in Christian worship. And we'll get back to him in just a moment. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs, although next week I'll be having a little medical procedure, and so I'm very happy that Don Noland will be our guest host next week. That's November 26 here on Keeping the Faith, 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoons, Central Standard Time. The guest next week will be Father Tim Hallett from the Chapel of St. John the Divine, the Episcopal Chapel on campus. And he'll be talking about some of the changes going on there. They're not changing the pipe organ that John Paul built back in 91, but they are expanding the building after a number of decades. So,
And for a long time, we were known as the Chapel of St. John the Unfinished.
That's right. And now it's finally being finished. That will be our topic next week on Keeping the Faith. Support for these Keeping the Faith programs is provided in part by the University YMCA at the University of Illinois. The Y is the oldest charity in the county and the oldest religious organization on the University of Illinois campus. It's been there since 1873, just 6 years or so after the university began. It began with Bible studies and service projects for students, and we continue that tradition, although now the Y is open to people of any faith who want to be involved in helping with social action projects or being involved in various community service groups. We have a tutoring group that's very active on our campus, tutoring at-need students in the public schools. We have alternative spring break programs. We have environmental programs. And, of course, we have things for adults and faculty and staff as well as university students. The Y has been at its present location on the corner of Wright and Chalmers, 1001 South Wright, right across from Lincoln Hall, for about 70 years. And, in fact, our wonderful building has been serving us in a great way those 70 years, but we are finding it very full of students these days and very active. So it's been a good place to be. I've been director there for about 7 years, director of the Y. Before that, I was pastor of McKinley Presbyterian Church here also on this campus. One of the things coming up in the Y in January is starting up our Communiversity semester. This is a series of non-credit, non-graded courses and activities offered to the general public 3 times a year, each semester and then also in the summer. And the Y has been doing this for, I think about 30 years. And it provides opportunities for people who'd like to teach something, for people who'd like to take a class just for fun, very cheaply, in a number of subjects. People can learn to dance there with Miss V, Aurora Villacorte, who's taught dance at the university and since her retirement has been teaching at the Y. People take martial arts courses in spirituality, almost anything somebody's interested in that wants to teach it. People can take a course and learn about it. Right now we're looking for teachers. So if you have something you'd like to teach, a special skill, special interest, do call the Y. 337-1500 in Champaign-Urbana. Or you can go to our website and then click on Communiversity. The website is universityymca.org. It's easy to propose a class, and teachers can set their own price for what they want people to pay to take it, and the Y helps with that. So if you're interested, do give us a call or check out the website and contact us online to teach a class starting next January for Communiversity. The Y also has a vehicle donation program, and one of the ways we continue our work on campus is through the generosity of people who would donate a car or a van or even a motorcycle or a boat. If it has a title, you may donate it to a charity, and we will sell it on campus. Often graduate students are interested in these things, sometimes faculty, and if you want to avoid the hassle of trading a vehicle in yourself or selling it yourself, we can do that quite easily. And for whatever amount we sell it for, you can take that amount off your taxes as a charitable contribution. If you're interested in donating a vehicle to the University Y, do call me, Steve Shoemaker, 337-1500. Well, let's get back to our topic for today on keeping the faith, building pipe organs. And let's hear another piece. Now we've talked about pipe organs being used to accompany congregational singing, mm-hmm. to accompany the choir, but they're also played as solo pieces. Tell us what we're going to hear next, the Vidor Toccata.
Oh, yes. One of the three things that an organ needs to do is to be able to play solo literature. And even if it's in the context of opening and closing voluntaries of a service. But a lot of times a church will believe, and I think rightly, that part of its ministry to the community is to be able to have good music that it can offer. So the organ has to be able to do that as well. What we're going to hear is the Toccata from the Fifth Symphony by Charles-Marie Vidor. This was recorded by a fellow named Stephen Cook, who is the organist on one of our brand new organs out in Williamsburg at First Presbyterian Church there.
That's Williamsburg, Virginia.
Yes, indeed. This church is right on the entrance to the Colonial District. And Stephen just fell in love with the organ we built so hard and so fast that he made his own CD, and here it is.
Let's listen now to the Vidor Toccata.
Thank you.
pipe organ from First Presbyterian Church in Williamsburg, Virginia, built by John Paul Buzard and colleagues and installed just this year, the Vidor Toccata. John Paul, who are your colleagues? It takes more than one person to build an instrument of such,
is it ever.
Such size and range. And you've built about one or two a year for all the years you've been in business.
On an average, yeah.
How many folks does it take to construct such a thing?
Well, we have right now a staff of 16 folks that are all committed to building new pipe organs and rebuilding and restoring existing organs. I've been truly blessed that people with such talent and such great demeanor have come to want to work with me. A few people deserve individual merit and recognition. My executive vice president and general manager is a fellow named Charles Eames, not related to the famous Eames chair, but almost in spirit, certainly. He does all of the engineering for the organs, all of it. And Brian Davis is my head voicer and the tonal director of our company. Both he and Charles came to me from sort of a circuitous route, but from Houston, from an organ builder that had been there for some years. There's a fellow that has worked with me since I was in the basement of my house, a fellow named Ray Wiggs, who does all of the console work.
So some of these people would be masters with wood, others with metal, others with...
Others with voicing pipes and,
musical skills.
And I've been very, very blessed that the people that have come to work with me have stayed. We're a pretty stable surrogate family, if you will.
Let me give the phone number again for folks who might like to talk with our guest today, John Paul Buzard, 333-9455 for those listening in Champaign-Urbana. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, a toll-free number if you're listening even on the Internet, if you're in the continental U.S., 1-800-222-9455. And I see we have a couple callers waiting. Let's go to line number one. Yes, you're on the air.
I just like to share two kind of short stories with you. I was an undergraduate here when there were still convocations in the music school Thursday at 11, and I had been, quote-unquote, forced into a music appreciation course to get my gen eds for LAS, which was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I went to the convocation, and someone played Messiaen's Nativity of God, and it was the most ferociously wonderful thing I had ever heard. It just called and shrieked, and it was so wonderful and intense. I thought I was going to, I just had goosebumps, and whenever that's played live, I just say, yes, I've got to be there. It was so wonderful.
Oh, that's fabulous.
And the other thing that happened to me was, I cannot remember quite when, but the organ in Smith Music Hall was put in by someone from Montreal, is that
Cassavant,
right?
Cassavant Frere, right. Of St. Hyacinthe, Quebec.
Right, and they came down, and I used to go in and watch to see what was happening, to see how many pipes were in and what was going on in there. And when they got to the point when they were tuning it, I sat in there on my lunch hours and my free time, because the fellow that was playing and the other one was up in the pipes played the pedal from Bach fugues that I knew, the tuneful ones with the great jumping, you know, the wonderful ones that we all know. Or he would play one manual, you know, one part of the fugue, and you could hear it, the tunes of it, and it was like going to a special kind of concert.
You were at a very, very special time in that organ's history. I'm envious. That's one of the finest organs in town, and you were there during the tonal finishing.
It was wonderful, the highlight was that those fellas knew I was back there, and one of them, I'm not even sure they both spoke English, but one did, and he came back when they were close to the end and said to me, did I want to go up and stand in the pipes, and the other one would play, and I said yes, so I climbed up the ladder after him and stood in the middle on a little...
On the passage board in the middle,
and the other one played and just ran through all the pipes, and I could hear them in space coming around behind me and back and forth and in front of me. It was so incredible. It just was fantastic. I have never forgotten any of that, and I am, even when Gerald Hamilton was here, he used to let me come to the student recitals they did internally in the organ division because he knew how much I loved it, and I just sat quietly in the back and listened. I really
and
love it.
And all because of being forced to take a course.
Yes, it was the best thing that ever happened to me, but I've had such intimate experiences with that. It's just, I'm so lucky. And the other thing I wanted to say is I'm so pleased that you and your business are in Champaign-Urbana.
Oh, well, thank you.
I'm really proud that we have an artist like you and somebody who understands and can do this, and also that you chose to be downtown and save an old building and renovate it. I think that's really fantastic.
Well,
thank you very much.
My goodness gracious. Well
thanks
thank
very
you.
Much for the call. Appreciate it. And we have another caller waiting on line number two. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, John Paul Buzard.
I've always thought that the organ was like the medieval Moog synthesizer. Is that a valid analogy?
No, that's not a bad analogy at all. It's an excellent analogy. I've often told organ committees that the pipe organ is really the world's first synthesizer, because in order to take advantage of the phenomenal range of color that an organ has is not just by playing individual stops alone, but by combining them. And how they're combined is what brings you these wonderful different kinds of sounds. And part of the art in tonally finishing and voicing an organ, as the last caller alluded to, is that when you blend, when you balance the individual stops, that can only be done over a period of time, and you have to sit in a quiet room and listen carefully. And when you can get the stops to where they can play together and not sound like you're hearing two sounds, but a new sound, a synthesis of the two sounds, you're absolutely right. The organ's the world's first synthesizer.
Which leads to my next question, which is, how do you get a sound like, say, strings out of a wind instrument?
Well, you have to use your imagination because there aren't really any bowed strings in an organ. But you're right. We have in the pipe organ, there are four families of sound. There are the principals or diapasons, which sound like a pipe organ. There are flutes, and they can either sound orchestral or not. There are reeds, which can sound like oboes and clarinets, bassoons, trumpets, tubas. And then there are strings. And the way that we get string pipes to imitate string instruments is by making their diameters relatively small, given their length. So a pipe that's 8 feet long that would play bottom C on a keyboard, if it was a diapason, it might be 5.5 inches in diameter. If it was a flute, it might be 6 inches in diameter. If it's a string, though, it's probably like 3 or 2.5 inches in diameter. That and a few other treatments at the mouth of the pipe, the place where it actually makes the sound, creates that kind of rosin-y character, that real bright character that strings have.
When we're talking about the sound of an organ, when a church has a committee that decides, yes, we want to have a pipe organ, we want a real pipe organ with real pipes, not an electronic,
not an imitation, yeah,
that imitates it. Do they care about these kind of details of sound, or do they just say, we want it to accompany hymns, we want it to accompany the choir, we want it to play some solo pieces?
Mm-hmm.
How involved do they get in the actual deciding the sound of an instrument?
This is a very, very good question. And the answer is they get involved in a wide variety of ways. There was a committee that traveled. In fact, it's for an upcoming instrument we're going to be building down in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Which church?
Hayes Barton United Methodist Church in Raleigh. They visited Atlanta, because there are a whole bunch of new, beautiful organs in downtown Atlanta. Ours was one of a gaggle, if you will, of three that were built during a particular year. And they went to several, and then they came to ours. It's at All Saints Episcopal Church there. And their consultant played it, and they just said, okay, do we really need to hear any more? This is what we want.
Really?
This is what we want. And they've gotten very involved in terms of how do you scale your strings? How do you scale your diapasons? And then there are others where they hire a consultant, and basically the consultant takes them to selected instruments and plays things, and sometimes they're just not as involved. But what we've always found out is that at the end of the day, when we have the organ installed and we're doing tonal finishing, people that come in and listen are absolutely transfixed, just like the caller that got to hear the cassavant be tonally finished.
We're running out of time, but let's hear a little bit more from a local organ that you built, the one that's in the Chapel of St. John the Divine.
Sure.
C.S. Lang, Tuba Tune and Fanfare, and we'll need to fade this out as we run out of time, but I'd like listeners to hear this very interesting sound.
Sure.
John Paul Buzard, our guest today, who's playing that piece?
That was played by a fellow named George Damp, who until recently was in Appleton, Wisconsin.
And you mentioned that the Cassavant organ at Smith Hall is one of the very good organs in Champaign-Urbana. Mm-hmm. For local listeners, where else might they hear good pipe organ music in town?
We have a very good organ community. In fact, at your former cure, McKinley Presbyterian Church is a very, very beautiful mechanical action organ built by the Dobson Organ Company from Lake City, Iowa. Over at First Presbyterian Church in Urbana is a very nice instrument, mechanical action organ that's there. There, for those that are interested in history, at the Unitarian Universalist Church on Green Street is a 1914 Kilgan organ that was moved from their campus chapel some years ago. Recital Hall, of course, is a fabulous organ. First Methodist Church in downtown Champaign has a cassavant that was only installed a month after Recital Hall was installed. There are only two serial numbers removed. And, of course, my favorite would be the Chapel of St. John the Divine or St. Andrew's Lutheran down the street, which are both my organs. So I would have to say that.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith has been John Paul Buzard of the Buzard Pipe Organ Company in Champaign. Thank you, John, for coming and bringing samples of your organs and others as well.
Well, it's been a privilege. Thank you for having me.
My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. I will be absent next week having a little medical procedure, but Don Nolan will be our guest host, and he'll be talking with Father Tim Hallett of the Chapel of St. John the Divine about their renovation program there. They're finishing that wonderful building on the corner of Wright and Armory. Coming up in December, we have some interesting programs. The Fellowship of Catholic University Students will be our guests in December. Coming up next semester, we'll be talking with several interesting folks that we've already got scheduled for Keeping the Faith. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again in a couple weeks.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
science and religion have to be at war with each other? Francis Collins doesn't think so. He's the head of the Human Genome Project and an evangelical Christian. But biologist and atheist Richard Dawkins says religion can never be reconciled with science. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, on To the Best of Our Knowledge, we'll hear from them both in part one of Electrons to Enlightenment. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 on WILL Urbana.
We wish to thank a special group of friends of WILL, the members of the WILL Legacy Circle, for providing for the future of WILL Radio through gifts that they've planned in their wills and estate documents. For more information about making such a gift, call Don DeBeard at 217-333-0850. Thank you.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy during the evening, then clearing. The low in the upper 20s with northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny with the high in the mid-40s and northwest winds around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, clear with the low in the mid-20s and light winds. And looking ahead to Tuesday, sunny with the high in the lower 50s. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.